How to Die in the Valley. Funerals took place in the large area of wild hill and forest alongside each town, the hunting side, where no planting was done, and ownership of seed meadows, cattail marshes, and gathering trees was either communal or a matter of use and usage only. Somewhere within a mile or so of the town, each of the five houses used a certain region of hilltop or high valley as a graveyard. There were no boundaries, and a family could place a new grave where it liked. The graveyard area was identified by the plantings of apple, manzanita, buckeye, wild azalea, foxglove, and California poppy. The graves were never marked with stones above ground, but sometimes with a small carved figure of redwood or cedar, and often were planted with one or more of the plants named above, which were looked after as long as survivors and descendants cared to keep the memory green. Most graveyards looked like apple orchards, only even more straggling and irregular than the usual valley orchard. The burning ground was in a vale or hollow near and below the graveyard. The fairly large circular ground was cleared of all grass and stamped down and sown with salt yearly by the Black Adobe Lodge members. The ceremony of dying was called going westward to the sunrise. The following description was given in writing by Micah of Acorn House of Sinshan. Going westward to the sunrise. Instructions for dying. Somebody in the Black Adobe Lodge would be the teacher of this knowledge. After the wine dance and before the grass, people who want to learn the songs of going westward to the sunrise would ask that teacher to instruct them. After the wine dance, they help the teacher build a heiia lodge outside the town, usually on the hunting side, sometimes on the planting side. We in the hill towns build with eucalyptus or willow poles, 9 or 12 to the side, tied to the ridgepole with withies, and weave the walls of fir boughs. On the valley floor, where the lodge may have to be bigger because there are more people, they leave the walls open but make a thick roof, since the rainy season is beginning and some of the celebrants are ill or old, needing shelter. Whether there are walls or not, the entrance is on the northeast side and the exit on the southwest. Dead manzanita wood and apple prunings are gathered and stacked for the fire. All the stones on the ground within the walls of the lodge are gathered together and are heia. The lodge is named Rejoining. The teacher goes there on the last night of the grass and spends the night there, digging a fireplace in the earth, without stones around it, and singing to bless the lodge. The learners come in the morning. They build and light a fire in the fire pit, and throw bay laurel leaves on it, and sing heia. If people want to talk then about dying their own death, or to talk about a person close to their heart who had died suddenly, or who was ill and dying, they would put a handful of bay leaves on the fire and talk. The teachers and the others listen. When they finish talking, the teacher might speak about things dreamed or learned in vision, about the way people may go when they die, or read from the Black Adobe books of poems that speak of the soul, or say nothing but beat heia on the one-note drum. Then the teaching would begin. They are to learn the songs to sing while dying, and the songs to sing for the dying. The teacher sings the first song to sing for the dying. That song will be sung when dying begins. It may be sung for a short time or a long time. The person dying may be able to sing with the watchers then, singing aloud or silently while going into death. The others, the watchers, keep watching and listening as they sing. When it is time to sing the second song for the dying, they will know, because the person dying has become still, or the breath is trying to get free. When the pulse and breath have ceased, the third song is begun. When the face is cold, it is ceased. The teacher tells these things between singing the songs, and teaches also that any of the watchers' songs may be sung again and again until the dying is over. The fourth and fifth songs are to be sung first at the burial, and aloud thereafter at any time or place for 4 days, and aloud at the grave after that for 5 days, and after that only in silence, in the mind, until the next world dance. After that they should not be sung for that person. Most people have heard the Watcher's songs sung, the songs for the dying, but have not heard the songs the dying person sings. The teacher will tell them that the people dying know when to sing the songs by the places their spirit comes to as they die. At first the mind will know these places, later the soul will know them. If they have lived mindfully, they will recognize these places, whether they are in the five houses or the four houses. It is well if they can sing all the way to the last song, but there is no need for it. What is needful is that the Watcher's songs be sung during the dying, if possible, and for the first 9 days of the death, to help the dying to die and the living to live. When this has been said and discussed, the teacher will sing the first line of the first song of the person dying. The learners will answer singing the first line of the first song of the Watchers. So they will learn all the five songs that they will sing when they die, never singing them aloud, but answering them antiphonally with the Watcher's songs. Only the teacher, who belongs to the Black Adobe Lodge, sings the songs of the dying person aloud. It is well for the learner to sing them many times in silence, then and later, so that they will be part of the mind and soul. These are the songs of going westward to the sunrise. They may be read apart or together, reading down the page or across it. The songs. The first song. The one dying sings, I will go forward. It is hard, it is hard. I will go forward. The Watchers sing, go forward, go forward. We are with you, we are beside you. The second song. The one dying sings, I will go forward. It is changing. I will go forward. The Watchers sing, go on now, go ahead. Leave us now. It is time to leave us. The third song. The one dying sings, there is a way. There is surely a way. There is a road. There is a way. The Watchers sing, you are going on. Your feet are on that road. You are going on that road. The fourth song, the one dying sings, the singing is changing, the light is changing, the singing is changing, the light is changing. They are coming, they are dancing and shining, rejoining. The Watchers sing, do not look back. You are entering, you are achieving, you are arriving. The light is growing, back here is darkness. Look forward. The fifth song. The one dying sings, the doors of the four houses are open. Surely they are open. The Watchers sing, the doors of the four houses are open. Surely they are open. When all the songs have been learned, they cover the fire with earth, filling in the fire pit, and while doing that, they sing this song. It is hard, it is hard, it is not easy. You must go back in. They would take down the lodge rejoining after that. They might take a pebble from the heap or a twig of evergreen from the roof to hang their knowledge on. They would go to bathe and go home. The teacher would go to a wild spring to wash, or, if a blue clay person, to the hayamas for ablution. This is how the way of dying is taught by people of the Black Adobe Lodge in the Valley of the Na. I have been learner twice and teacher seven times. If nobody among the family and friends of the dead had learned the Watcher's song, a member of the Black Adobe Lodge came to sing them at the deathbed, if possible, and at the graveside, and in fact there was always a Black Adobe person in attendance to help out and officiate during a death and funeral. If there was any doubt or anxiety, a member of the Doctor's Lodge certified death. Soon, always within that day and night, the dead person was carried on a covered litter to the burning ground of their house. Family and mourners were the bearers. Wood might be given and carried to the burning ground by mourners, but only Black Adobe Lodge members stayed at the cremation. Family and mourners were directed to go home. An old sad song in the valley hints at this. I watch the smoke behind the ridge, the smoke rising and the rain falling. Cremation was the rule, but a good many circumstances might prevent it. Very wet weather in the rainy season, very dry weather in the dry season when the danger of forest fire disallowed the building of any open fire, and the expressed desire of the person to be buried, not cremated, after death. In these cases, a black adobe group dug the grave and laid the dead person in it, wrapped in cotton sheeting, on the left side, with the limbs somewhat flexed. Then they watched beside the pyre, or the open grave, for one night, singing the going westward songs at intervals. In the morning, all who wished to came to attend the burial. Close kinfolk, assisted by the lodge members, made the small grave for the ashes, or filled in the grave. When the grave was filled, a member of the black adobe spoke, once only, aloud, the nine words. Unceasing, unending, unobstructed, open, ongoing, incoming, ever, ever, ever. A wisp of ashes or of the dead person's hair was cast upward into the air as the nine words were spoken. Children at the funeral might be given seeds or grain to scatter on the grave, so that birds would gather there to carry the mourners' songs to the four houses. Anybody who wanted to could remain, or come back at intervals during the first 4 days after the death, to sing the going westward songs at the graveside. And during the 5 days after that, a family member or a mourner from the dead person's house came at least once in the day to sing the going westward songs. On the ninth day, traditionally, the mourners regathered to mark the grave with a tree or shrub or flowers and sing aloud for the last time. After that, no formal mourning took place, nor were the songs to be sung aloud for that person. When somebody died outside the valley, the companions would make every effort to cremate the body and bring home the ashes, or at least some locks of hair and pieces of clothing, which would then be buried, and the songs sung. If someone was lost or drowned at sea, a most unlikely event, so that there was no death to carry, a relation would ask the Black Adobe Lodge to set a day for mourning, and the songs of the watchers would be sung daily for 9 days at the dead person's heimas. Although anyone might come to the burial ceremony, all these ceremonies were essentially private, observed by the close family and friends of the dead, and by Black Adobe assistants. There was no public mourning for any death until the world dance at the equinox of spring. As described in the section on that dance, the first night of the world was a community ceremony of mourning and remembrance for all who had died in that town during the year. The long night ceremony of burning the names was a fearfully intense, overcharged excitation and release of emotion. It was dreaded by many of the participants, people trained to value serenity and honor equanimity, and required on this one night to share without shame or reserve the pent-up grief, terror, and anger that death leaves the living to endure. It was a more intensely participatory and abreactive ceremony even than the moon and the wine, with all their emotional license and reversals. It expressed, as did no other valley ceremony, the emotional and social interdependence of the community, their profound sense of living and dying with one another. The fourth day of the world, Wakwa, which are intellectually closely connected with mourning rites, are described in the section on the world dance. Valley beliefs and theories concerning the soul were of a most amazing complexity and imperturbably self-contradictory. One might as well try to pin valley people down to one creation myth as to get a coherent description of the soul out of them. This multiplicity, of course, was in no sense of the word accidental. It was of the essence. A fairly esoteric approach to the soul is represented in this book by the written piece The Black Beetle's Soul. An expression of a more popular body of belief or thought is the poem The Inland Sea. The valley theory of reincarnation or metempsychosis may be unsystematic, but it is lively. Specifically connected with funeral and mourning rites was a body of popular theory and superstition concerning various kinds of soul involved in the different stages of the funeral. When the breath soul escapes at death, other souls are caught in the death, the corpse, and must be released. If not released, they may linger around the grave or the places where the dead person lived and worked, causing both mental and material trouble, anxiety, illness, apparitions. the earth soul is released by cremation and ash burial or burial of the body. The eye soul is set free when the bit of ash or lock of hair is cast into the wind. And finally, the kin soul is released only by the casting of the names into the fire at the world dance ceremony of general mourning. In the case, not very common in the valley, of a death abroad or a disappearance, when there is no death, no body, only the kin soul can be ritually released. As mentioned, some possessions of the dead person may be brought home and buried in the graveyard, so that there's a place in the earth for the souls to come to, and the going westward songs may be sung in the Heimas. But a feeling of discomfort and incompletion remains, expressed in the conviction that the other souls will come back to haunt or simply to confirm the lost person's death and take leave of the survivors. The breath soul is invisible, a voice in the night or twilight in lonely places in the hills. The earth soul might return as an apparition of the person as they were when they died, or after death, and this ghost is feared by people who hold the belief. The eye soul is benign, sensed only as a presence, yearning or blessing or saying farewell, going by on the wind's road. Certain eighth house invocations are addressed to this soul, or to all souls who are thought of as sometimes returning to the valley on the wind. O mothers of my mother, let this wind bear blessing. For Kesh who leave the valley, mostly members of the Finder's Lodge, the fear of dying outside the valley, not being buried in valley ground, is real. The Kesh sense of community, of continuity with the dirt, water, air, and living creatures of the valley, determines them to overcome any ordeals in order to get home to die. The idea of dying and being buried in foreign lands is black despair. There was a story told about a group of finders exploring down the outer coast who got into a chemically poisoned area. Four of the group died. The four survivors mummified their companions' bodies with the aid of the bone-dry desert climate of the south coast, and so were able to carry them home for burial. Four alive carrying four dead for a month's journey. The feat was spoken of with sympathy, but not with admiration. It was a bit excessive, a bit too heroic for valley approbation. The deaths of animals must be included in any account of valley funerary practices. Domestic animals killed for food were addressed before or during the act of killing by any member of the blood lodge, any adult or adolescent woman. She said to the animal, "Your life ends now, your death begins. Beautiful one, give us our need. We give you our words." The formula was gabbled without the least feeling or understanding, often, but it was never omitted, even by a housewife wringing the neck of a chicken. No animal was killed for use unless a woman was present to speak the death words. In Wakwaha and Chukalmas, and by some in other towns, a handful of the blood of a slaughtered animal was mixed with red or black earth and made into a little ball, which was kept in the blood lodge rooms of the obsidian Heimas. These balls were used in making adobe bricks for repairs or new constructions. Whatever parts of a butchered animal, domestic or wild, were not prepared for food or other uses, were promptly buried by members of the tanner's art, usually in a fallow field on the planting side of town. It was customary to set out some bits or bones on a hilltop on the hunting side, for coyote and buzzard, when a big animal was butchered. Wild animals hunted had each their song, taught by the hunter's lodge. The hunter sang or talked to the animal he was hunting, silently while the hunt was on, aloud, at or after the kill. The songs varied widely from town to town, and there were hundreds of them. Some of the fish invocations are rather curious. Trout song from Chumo. A shadow, a dry shadow, pay no attention, be praised. Fishing song from Chukalmas. Shuyala, come find hands, come find tongue, come find eyelids, come find feet. Deer hunting song from Chukalmas. This way you must come, delicately walking. I name you Giver. A very old deer hunting song from Madidino is related to the butcher's formula. Dearness manifests a death. My word is grateful. Dearness is the noun deer in the sky mode. Bear hunting song from Tachas Tochas. Huana wa ah ah, the heart is there. Eat my fear. Huana wa ah ah ah, it must be done. You must come in. You must be sorry. Bears were killed only when they posed a threat to livestock or people. The meat was disliked and not usually brought into town, though hunters on extended trips might eat bear. You in this song is in the particular form, not the generic. The hunter is not hunting bearness, any bear, but is after a particular bear who has made trouble for the hunter and for bears in general, and who therefore ought to be sorry. Bear's Death Song from Xinshan. Rain darken earth, blessing falling from the sixth house, heart's blood falling. The bear was the sign of the sixth house, the house of rain and death. The old man who sang this song said, "Nobody in this town has killed any bear since Grandmother Mountain erupted last. That is a good hunter's song, though. Even when a child hunts a wood rat, he ought to sing that song. The bear is there." According to the theory of the four souls, animals possessed all four kinds, but the system got very vague when extended to plants. All wild birds were considered, essentially, to be souls. The kin soul of an animal was its generic aspect. Deerness, not that deer. Cowness, not this cow. The apparent confusions and evasions of the valley idea of reincarnation or transmigration of souls begin to clarify here. This cow that I now kill for food is cowness giving itself to me as food because it has been properly treated and entreated. And again it will give itself to me as a cow at my need and entreaty. And I that kill this cow am a name, a word, an instance of humanness, and, with the cow, of being in general. A moment in a place, a relationship. Named domestic animals, pets, were believed by the superstitious to return as eye souls or breath souls, and sometimes as earth souls, giving rise to animal ghost stories. A well-known gray horse ghost haunted a canyon in the rough hills behind Chukomas. Earth souls of ewes who died in lambing were troublesome in the fog in the fields of Onmalin. Ghost stories of a moralistic nature involve hunters who hunted on the planting side, or who failed in courtesy or respect towards the animal they hunted, or who killed immoderately without need. The latter kind of story, often told at Bay Laurel Lodge campfires, relates how a hunter is terrified, abased, and perhaps hurt or killed by a manifestation of the generic animal, the deer. The wild swan, supernatural in size, beauty, and power. In stories of hunters who omitted the rites of the killer, who did not speak to the death, a ghost of the particular animal he killed comes to lead the hunter astray in an endless hunt and into madness, accompanying him constantly, visible to him, but to no one else. There was a man spoken of in Chukomas who was apparently an actual instance of this kind of guilt haunting. He was not an ordinary forest-living person, or solitary, but lived without shelter, fled at the sight of human beings, and never spoke. He had been a young man named Young Moon of the Obsidian. What his transgression was nobody knew for sure, but the assumption in the hunter's lodge was that he had killed a doe and fawn without singing. That is, without speaking even the essential formula at the death, a brief, worn-down version of the butcher's formula. Beautiful one, for your death, my words. This formula was spoken by a hunter shooting, by a trapper opening the trap, by anyone felling a tree, by anyone taking life. That it could be forgotten was not considered a possibility. Young Moon's omission was deliberate, therefore punishable. Even when a corn borer was squashed, a mosquito swatted, a branch broken, a flower picked, the formula was muttered in its ultimately reduced form, Arariv, my words. Although the one-word formula was spoken as mindlessly as our bless you to a sneeze, it was always spoken. The speaking of it maintained and contained the idea of need and fulfillment, demand and response, of relationship and interdependence, and that idea could be brought fully to mind when it was wanted. The stone, as they said, contains the mountain. One or two-word formulas of this kind were known as pebbles. Another of them was the word ruha, spoken when one added a pebble, a material one, to the cairn or heap at certain places. By certain boulders, at crossroads, at various places along the paths on Amakulkan. The word was without other meaning to most people than the word you say when you add a stone to a heya cairn. Scholars of the Heyamas knew it to be an archaic form of the root hur, to sustain, carry along, take with one. It was the last word of a lost sentence. The present stone contains the absent mountain. Most of the meaningless matrix syllables of songs were pebble words. The word heya was the word that contained the world, visible and invisible, on this side and on the other side of death.